One of the best bosses you can get in a marketing job is a boss that'll just let you do stuff.
Sharp strategies, sweet success.
I want to talk about, like, in this episode, if you're in a position, like, you're a marketer, you want to get into legal marketing, or maybe you're just somebody who wants to get into marketing in general, you have not very much experience. Like, how would you get a job at, like, one of the law firms, like what I work at, or how would you get a job, maybe just any small business doing marketing for any kind of professional small business? Because it doesn't have to be legal marketing. Like, I think, like, a lot of the stuff you and I are going to talk about is going to apply for somebody trying to get a job, like, at a doctor's office or at a just any kind of local company. So just generally talking about that, like, if you want one of these jobs, and also, like, do you want one of these jobs? Because I don't really think people know, like, until they get in there, like, if they actually want to work in marketing.
What did you think that marketing originally was? Like, I remember being in high school, and I would look around, and I'd see commercials and billboards and all this advertising, like, neon signs. And then whenever we got older, those shows like Mad Men came out, and, like, marketing became really cool. What do you think the big difference is between what it actually is and what people think it is?
So I think for a lot of people think it is, like, creativity. Like, it's creating something. Like, marketing is art, I think, is what a lot of people kind of think of it as going in, like, professional art. And that was kind of what I thought. Like, when I was a kid, like, actually what I wanted to be, like, what I still want to be, is a writer, like an author. And, like, but I majored in marketing. Like, I focused on marketing in college because in my head, that, or art, but business. That's kind of what I thought. And, I mean, I'm glad I went that route because I do end up liking marketing. There's a lot of writing in there. But, like, you know, also, like, marketing isn't quite that because it's so collaborative. Like, if you have an idea and you want to, like, let's say you have a great idea for a magazine ad. I used to read, like, a lot of magazines when I was a kid. I don't know if you did. Did you read, like, a lot of magazines when you were a kid? Like, did you get those, like, catalogs in the mail, like, with a bunch of clothes?
I read Cosmo. I read... I would read, Country Living. I actually don't subscribe to that because they have, like, a lot of good recipes and good interior design ideas.
I was thinking about this, like, on my very long car ride for vacation. Like, as a kid, like, my mom had a Highlight subscription for me, so I had that. No.
I remember Highlights.
Yeah. And then had a magazine, like Cosmo and Redbook, because I saw all those in my mom's hair salon. And so, like, that was what marketing was when I was a kid. But, like, let's say you have a good idea for a magazine ad, like, 2-page spread about lipstick or whatever. Like, you know, you kind of think, like, marketing is, like, getting that really good idea and, like, pushing that idea to publication and getting a bunch of, like, new sales from it. But, like, really, like, marketing, like, for any business is so collaborative that it's not an individual pursuit. You're not taking your good idea and running it up the chain and putting it out there. You're usually taking somebody else's good idea and making it happen. And I think that's
Oh, you made a really good point, though, because whenever you said that, like, whenever you saw magazines, that's the surface. That's what all of us were exposed to. So we're only seeing the surface. So we're making that assumption based on what we're seeing on the surface. But there's really a whole world that goes behind it. There's trending. There's area. There's geographical analysis. There's psychological studies. Like, what do people respond to? What immediately gets their attention? You know, what has to be the surrounding context? So that thing that you just see in the magazine, that's the outcome. And that's, like, the best of all of it. But there's, like, a whole world kind of, like, behind it, holding it up.
And, I mean, within, like, magazines themselves, like, there's so much that, I mean, even back then, there were so many ways to, like, localize the content. Whenever I think of, like, ads that went wrong, I always think of, like, the Dove ads that they had that were kind of a disaster. They're, like... They weren't racist, but they had, like a woman who was an African-American woman take off her shirt and she became a white woman. And that was the ad. And I'll never forget that. That one was like, whoop. That was a big misstep. Yeah.
One of the things I love to do is go on the internet and look at poorly designed ads. There's one of them that, oh my gosh, I feel so shameful for even bringing this up, but I always think of it. But there was one, it was for like one of those products where it's like, oh, my mouth is on fire. I need to quick. Oh, I got acid reflux. It's like a.
Like Pepto-Bismol?
Yeah, it's like Pepto,
Harper?
But it was white.
Oh,
yeah, it was from heartburn. Oh. But the thing was white.
Oh my God.
That is too. It was so bad. I was so bad. And they had, I think I saw one commercial for it and I never saw it again. I was like, someone messed up.
Like Bumble had a recent snafu, like where they made a bunch of billboards where the Bumble ad was like, being celibate isn't the answer. And it had like a face of a happy woman or something like that. And it's like, it's so funny when you think about it, that's something that made it through. That made it through a few different levels at the marketing department for Bumble and Dove and whatever that product is you're talking about.
You know, you never know. You know, maybe it's just a bunch of bad group think. Maybe it was just one person who's just very controlling of the meeting. We've all been in a meeting like that where something really shitty comes out of the product and you're like, nobody listened to a word I said.
Whenever I started in marketing, like I would get so frustrated because of like, nobody's listening to me, you know, nobody's listening to me, but they're bad ideas. Well, like the data doesn't lie. Like if it doesn't generate more money, it doesn't generate more revenue. Like there's the proof in your pudding. Like let people implement their bad ideas. Or more commonly, like you're the marketer at a law firm and the law firm hires a paralegal and the paralegal, and maybe I've talked about this before, but like they have a marketing idea that they want to implement and they want you as the marketer to implement it. And like, and that's not, you know, if you're a marketer, that's not your job. Your job isn't to implement random ideas handed to you by other team members. But sometimes like, it's just like, all right, let's do it. You know, cause sometimes there's a lesson in there. Maybe there's a lesson for you. Maybe it was a good idea and you were being like snobbish about the paralegal with the marketing idea. You know, so maybe it works out and you have to humble yourself and be like, oh, you know, that was a good idea.
You know, you make a really good point though, because you have to be open before you can work with any team, which any job that you get at in a marketing world, I assume you're not doing it alone. You're doing it as a collaboration on a team. You got to have a kind of personality that's willing to work with people. And it's not just your way or the highway. And sure, you may have the best idea, but there's still going to be good information gained and gathered and data that you can analyze and apply to make an idea better, even if the idea isn't so great that launches initially first.
You can learn from a good idea, implementing that or implementing a bad idea. Like you'll either learn what you should do or what not to do. And you shouldn't be closed off. I see it a lot with somebody who's just out of college, comes into a marketing role. And then like, you know, the business owner says, oh, I want to do like this print magazine thing. Like a lot of people are taught in schools, like print's dead. Print is dead. Like, you know, marketing doesn't work. It's all digital or whatever. But, you know, you don't know what you don't know. You don't know that still works. You don't know. Maybe your boss has a great idea. Maybe it has a bad idea. And as long as like, they're the ones paying the bills and results are measured honestly and accurately. Like you have nothing to lose because if you implement somebody's idea and it sucks, you know, that was somebody else's idea. You did your best.
Oh, no, you make such another good point too, because you have to be able to put your ego aside, but still be willing to put your name on the work.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to stand by your good work. So I guess like I get to get started to talk to people a little bit about like how to get one of these jobs and like what to look for. I guess like before you get into it, like ask yourself why you want to go into marketing. Because I think I mentioned the office artist, the concept of like going in, do a marketing job and being creative. Like your entry level marketing roles are going to be like minimal creativity overall. Like it's going to involve you know, calling people, emailing people, maybe sometimes going into Canva and setting up a design, maybe sometimes setting out an e-newsletter or something like that. But, you know, you're not going to be, you know, if you're just starting out, like, don't expect to be doing like a lot of the heavy strategy setting, analytic, you know, review, research, whatever. You got to start out in these roles, realizing that you're going to be the one doing a lot of the legwork and implementing, you know, somebody else's stuff. And that can be challenging, particularly if you're going into this, you know, going into a role, like feeling like maybe you don't have to do that stuff. And if that's the case, then apply for a job that isn't that, or, you know, don't do marketing, I guess.
think that kind of brings to a point where I always tell my people, you got to manage your expectations. If you expect that people are going to listen to you, you're going to get learned a lesson real quick. But if you go in expecting, hey, people may not listen to me, but I'm going to contribute. And if you set your goal, hey, my goal is to stand by what I contribute. I don't have to get anybody's buy-in. I don't have to get anybody to say yes to anything that I am putting out there. That'd be nice. But as long as I am putting out work that I'm putting out things on the table that I can proudly stand by. If you make that your goal, you can't lose.
I mean, you really can't. In the 2 years I've been a fractional CMO, I've worked with, let's say, like a dozen marketers, and only about half of them are still with the companies that they started there. And it's not because like I steamrolled through and I'm like, fire them, fire them, fire them. In fact, like I try to make that the last thing I do, you know, like the recommendation to fire somebody. Because like I'm honestly trying to approach the world with the mindset that like everyone is pretty much the same, just living a different set of circumstances, and assuming that everyone wants to be good at their job, wants to have a good job, like let's make firing the last option. But I feel like a lot of them come in just with the expectation that they're going to be the ones making the calls. They're going to be the ones doing the SEO. But really, like, the truth is the business owner is the one making, for a small business or a medium-sized business, they're the ones making the calls. They're the ones making the plays. Even with somebody like me, like, who's saying, like, this is a strategy that works well, this is a strategy that works not so well. Like, I can't, you know, if the business owner doesn't want to do it, I can't just not. You know, it's going to happen, like, regardless. And if they don't want to do it, I'm not going to make it happen because it's their business. It's their choice. And, you know, it's important to do what the business owner wants to do. I mean, that feels like just such basic advice. But, like, if you're a marketer, you're not going to come into this job and convince them to redesign their website, stop doing print marketing, and invest, like, 10x and digital marketing just because they hired you, the marketer. So manage your expectations. And like the marketers who are still with these law firms, who stuck around, who are, you know, great employees who love their job and they're doing great work for the law firms, they're the ones that just like they don't care if they're the smartest, if they're seen as the smartest person in the room or not. They're just there to like make the social media content, cut the video, make the Instagram post, and like they focus on getting it done first. And then, you know, whenever they're reaping the rewards of doing good work, then they're able to push their ideas forward or put their creative energy out there.
Yeah. And, you know, I think a point that you made a few moments ago that kind of resonates with me, the whole point, like you're not there to, what would you say about being in the room? You don't have to be the smartest person in the room. Yes. Okay. Another thing too. So that made me think of two points. So the first one, you don't have to be the smartest person in the room. And even if you are, people don't have to know it. If you feel like you are, see if you can get other people to discover it through the conversation and the interaction that they have with you, not what you're doing, what you're putting out there. See if they're smart enough to receive it. So if they're asking you questions and they're actually wanting to take things away from you, that's the time to show people where you're at or what you can contribute as far as being the smartest person in the room. They're not asking you those questions, then you're just there to participate.
Yeah.
Mostly spectate. The other part is the asking questions. So whenever you go to a new place or a new team, a new firm, and you have so much that you want to put out there and you got so much that you want to contribute, it is so, just human psychology, it is so disarm, like it's very like, people put up a defense whenever you put a lot out there. If you just like dump everything you got out on the table and you're like, look at everything I have, people are just like put off by it. They're like, oh, okay. However, if you ask questions and you kind of hold all your cards and you're like, what do you want? What's best that you've seen from this role? What do you expect from somebody like me? How can I help make your job better? You help other people feel like they are the best in the room, then they're willing to kind of look around and say, okay, well, who else is in the room? And you'll be there with them. So helping other people kind of discover how good they can be, they'll look back and say, wow, this person was here with me that whole time that I felt that way. I feel my best when I'm around this person. They're going to lift you up too.
I had this experience recently, and I'll share a little bit of a story, but you're so right. And like something else to understand is like bosses are busy. Not just bosses, but like everyone in your office is busy. Everyone that's in the office that you're working at, that you just got a job at, they all have lives. They all been working there for a couple of years. They all have access to grind. They all have things they're proud of, good work that they've done that really helped the company. They all had low moments, things that they've done, made a mistake, whatever. Like walk into an office realizing like people are dynamic, people are busy. And like if you show up, and this is the story I was wanting to tell, like recently had a gal who was hired for a law firm, and like before I met with her, she did what, you know, they say you're supposed to do, which is to look in at the person you're interviewing with. And she went to my website for my business. She went to my LinkedIn, and she like paid attention because she hit me with stuff in the interview. It's like, I saw on your webpage, you said this. And I was like, oh, I did. Damn. But I noted it. I was like, wow, she really looked and paid attention. But instead of feeling like it was like, wow, that was really cool, it almost felt like a bit creepy because like there's stuff that like you had to look a while, right? Not that I'm discouraging people from doing that, but it certainly like was like the energy there, like the early signs of that. Before she was officially hired, sent me an email with over like 30 pages of things that she herself has putting together, like marketing, like how to guide, marketing guide, things like that, how to do various things. They're all good, pretty basic, you know, like pretty like ChatGPT could have typed this out for you, kind of basic stuff. Nothing wrong with that. Everyone starts somewhere, but you know. But like definitely kept bringing a lot of energy, filling my inbox with emails, a lot of stuff. Everything that we talked about became like a discussion. And it just like at first it started kind of like slow and innocent, like, oh, this is a person who was like really wants a job and did their due diligence looking in on me before the interview, to somebody who was just creating, basically asking me to devote a lot of energy to like her email, her ideas, and every point of the marketing strategy. And eventually like it kind of culminated, and I won't go into the details, but this is a person who had a lot going on in their life. Clearly they were really motivated, interested in marketing. And I fully feel like 10 years down the road, they're going to be somebody who does like a lot of incredible cool stuff because they have like that energy and that interest in marketing. And this is where they're starting, but they're going to keep growing and they're going to be somewhere incredible. But like that kind of manic energy, I think, like if you have it, like you do have to kind of rein it in an office setting, because like it's a lot for other people to handle. And it's not because they don't want to work, but it's just because like it's just like what you said, when it's a lot like that, it's a lot. It just becomes like emotionally, I guess, overwhelming.
I think a lot of us can probably, like, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking of times in my work history where I've been that person, because really what it is, it's attention-seeking behavior. And I seek attention, still do.
I mean, we're making a podcast right here. We're trying to look at this, you know?
Look at me. Yeah. But I mean, everybody seeks attention in their own way. It's just how you go about doing it. What is the time? Where's the place? Who's the audience? What's the approach? Are you getting the satisfaction that you're seeking? And a lot of times, if you're seeking it in the wrong way, you're adding another element of guilt, which you're never going to satisfy by seeking the attention in that way again. Like, but you continue doing it, and it's just the vicious cycle, especially if you do it at work. So what I call that is emotional intelligence. I'm not the only one who calls it that. So emotional intelligence. So having the ability to kind of sense that self in yourself and be like, this is attention-seeking behavior. I have a lot to contribute on this, so I'm only going to contribute when they ask me. If they ask me directly, and then try and keep your responses like a little bit more limited. And then it's like, okay, when they ask you, then you can put it out there in a condensed format and move on. You could go back to yourself whenever you are starting out on your marketing career. What advice would you give yourself? Like, what kind of company would you look for? What kind of boss would you want to, like, what kind of employee would you want to be for your boss?
I got really lucky when I got this marketing job, honestly. So like, I'm I got lucky because like I really didn't know what I was looking for and ended up getting like a good boss at a good company who could give me the skills and experience I needed. So like all of this was like I didn't know it at the time. So it's just me looking back and thinking like, okay, like what did I get from that? Or like what did I do? Like how did I know? I guess like, you know, look for a company. Like if you're working for a small company, which I recommend, like I've never had to work many corporate jobs. Like that's just the truth. Most of the companies that I worked for have been like, let's just say like 5 million in revenue or under. Like that's been my wheelhouse. That's why I like small. Like look for companies where like the owner is like a good person and not a total piece of shit. Because like the job I worked at when I first moved to Virginia, the owner was just total POS. Like he really was. I don't mind saying that. Like I asked for a 5K raise and I got fired. And I don't really regret it because it set me up to get the job that I got. That gave me the experience to be able to do stuff like this, talk about marketing, specialize in legal marketing. But like I knew from the outset they were terrible. Like they talked about instead of bringing, like they would go out to bars and bring girls home, but instead of bringing them back to their home, they would bring them back to the office so the girls didn't know where they live. Yeah, that is like it's obvious that the
Oh my God.
like that's like somebody who's
Personal.
not ethical. He's a that clearly misogynistic or something, but that was like that was that boss, right? Like that's a bad boss. Like if you get with that boss, like exit the company, quit, you know, you don't need that job. Trust me, you don't need that job. Like quit that company. And then it's just like if you're working for a small enough company and you know the boss, look for somebody who's like has integrity and like who's and it's okay to want to make money. Like, you know, if you're working for a small business, these small business owners, they want to make money. They want to make more money than they're making now. They want to grow. They want to provide for their family. They want to hire more employees, get a bigger office. So, like, understand, like, we are talking about people who want to make money and openly want to make money. That's not something they're ashamed of. And so, like, you know, if that's a mindset that you struggle with, you know, maybe working corporate is a little bit more better. Corporate jobs have like the luxury of having more of a mission, I guess. That's less related to making money, even though that it all comes back to making money, right? But you get some distance from it. When you work for a small business owner, they want to make money, but if they have integrity, you'll know it just by talking to them. You'll know that they're a good person. If they give time off, you know, without you know, that you need, without being a butthole about it, if they're just good people and kind to their employees, that's the kind of company you want to work for. And, you know, again, if they want to make money, that's just the nature of working for somebody who's an entrepreneur who owns a business. We all want to make money, right? But you know, look for the real ones who have just those scruples. And then that's the kind of company you can grow with. That's the kind of company you can stay with. That's not gonna manipulate you, abuse you, or make you do stupid stuff or whatever, you know, whatever marketers come up against these days. So yeah, that's my advice.
I think another thing too, whenever you're looking for kind of that position, I mean, some places they have that role just because they have it, but they don't respect it. Like, I mean, and that role, the way that you market your company and the way that you is kind of like the way that you market yourself. So if you don't respect yourself, you're not going to respect your marketing department. If you don't respect your company, you're not going to respect your marketing department. So, I mean, there might be some questions that you can ask during the interview process. There might be some background things that you can look up. And I mean, it just kind of boils down to like what do you want to get out of it? You know, obviously you want to help them make money, sure, but you are going to walk away at the end of the day with something, regardless of how much money they make. What do you want to be walking away with? Do you want to walk away with a shitty feeling that really makes it hard to sleep at night? Or do you want to walk away with your head held high and your integrity intact, and you can stand by the product that you're making and actually, you know, feel good about it by the end of the day?
Well, and you know, from a more practical standpoint, you know, have good work that you can list on your portfolio on your website, have, you know, cool things that you can list on your resume. One of the best bosses you can get in a marketing job is a boss that'll just let you do stuff. Like, you really don't want the kind of boss that's going to bottleneck you and like has to approve, rubber stamp anything. I mean, that's not the type of, you know, business owner I want to work with, because that's somebody who's controlling. That's somebody who's, you know, really scared of marketing. Like, if they're really scared of marketing, then you're going to have a hard time marketing for them. But I, you know, yeah, you know, you want to the kind of boss that's going to let you do stuff, that's going to build your portfolio. Hopefully, you like marketing. If you don't like marketing, it's going to be a shit job for you and it's going to be awful. If you don't like making money, then it's going to be, you know, tough. You're not going to enjoy what you do. You know, a lot of people go into like working for charity groups, charity organizations, and, you know, maybe that's the route. You know, if that's the kind of thing that, you know, if you can't go into a job, do work that you like, help somebody make money, if like that like seems unpalatable to you, like consider working for a charity organization, consider, you know, doing that kind of thing. The downside is like if you want to work for a charity organization, there's less money involved. So like your ceiling for how much you're going to make as a marketer for somebody working within charity is going to be a lot lower than it is going to be like working for a small business. Like small business owners, like if you do really good work for them and you help them grow and you help them make money, the good ones will, your salary will climb. You'll rise with, and, you know, eventually, well, there's like an interesting, it's like everyone's useful. Everyone's like promoted to incompetency. Like, at some point, you'll outgrow your law firm, not really incompetency, but at some point, you'll, like, you'll hit the ceiling with the small business you work for. Just on to the next. There's so many small businesses out there. You know, more and more are opening each day. Like, you're not working for the only business owner in town.
I was telling my people recently, because we're about to do a realignment where everybody, like, gets up and they get to pick on what they want their schedule and their leader to be based on the last 12 months of their performance. And it's ranked from top down throughout the entire site. So everyone, like right now, this whole week, like all of that's going down at work and everybody, rah. But I don't really worry too much. My performance is pretty good, so I feel good. But anyway, and everybody kind of like, you know, gets all up in their head, and it's really just kind of like, well, you know, if you just, when you're in those moments, like just do your best and put your best foot out there, and who knows what tomorrow brings, but even if tomorrow is a disaster, you will at least have the experience and the skills. And the whole point is to take it and make it better. Like, you don't try and find the plateau and then live on the plateau for the rest of your life. That's really not the intention of making the world a better place.
There's a marketing lesson in there, because like every marketing campaign has a shelf life. And at some point, you got to refresh it. So even if you're doing some marketing now that's working really good, like you got to change it. So there's always something to do. And then like, too, like, I feel like, at least this was my mindset back in the day. Like when I got a job, like I held on to it for dear life because I was afraid of losing it and not being able to make money and not being able to provide. But like, and maybe you and I are just like super optimistic. Maybe somebody listening to this is like, these are just too optimistic people who like to work, freaks. But it's like, there's always another job. You know, there's always another place where you can go and at least like what you do. Like, there's no excuse to like work a job for somebody you don't like and doing stuff you don't like to do. Or if like you're just tired of it, like go to the next job. Like, you're not married, y'all. Like, you can go out and date. Like, go out and date, find another company that's gonna treat you right, treat you better, pay you more, whatever. Like, and it's easier than it seems, as long as you're the person willing to show up and doing the work and not having to be the center of attention, the smartest person in the room all the time.
Yeah.
That's a big toxic trait of mine, by the way. I always try to be the smartest person. I'm working on myself.
Real talk. One of the pieces of feedback that I got, I went into one of my senior leaders' offices. This was before I was even a team manager. I was still a coach at the time, and it was still pretty early before I had started to like career path back like up to manager where I'm at now. So it was like, maybe this was like maybe 4 years ago. So I'm in one of my senior leader's offices. This is my boss's boss in like another department. So this guy is like, and he had been with the company for a really long time. They actually had a street sign out on our main street with his last name on it. They were like, this is his boulevard. He had like a lot of clout, and he had proven himself around the building. And he had known me for about 6-7 years at that point, just kind of like being around in the building, in the business. So I'm in his office and I'm like, okay, I'm really excited. And I put all my stuff down on his table, and immediately he's just like, Christine, has anyone told you that you have the ability to absolutely exhaust an entire room? And I was like, no. He was like, I'm sorry. It's just been a day. And I'm like, okay. I look back on it now and I laugh. But at the time, I was holding back tears. It was probably one of the most challenging moments of my life. I didn't want him to see me cry, but I'm like stone cold, like no expression on my face, like a tear is rolling down.
I've been there. You've been there. I think everybody's been there. Everyone who is self-motivated, driven, passionate, has a hard work ethic, sees a future for themselves and believes in it, believes in themselves. You know, everybody has a moment where you're excited about what you can contribute. And so the way that you carry yourself in those moments really matter.
And on top of that, somebody taught me this, and I try to use it more, but I'm talkative, and I like talking about things. I like being smart and stuff. So it's this problem. Like, I'm working on it. Like, I'm growing every day. Like, I'm almost 40, but I'm growing every day. Like, just practice, like, not talking. It's something you said earlier. Like, if you're in a meeting and, like, you're trying to be the person who says the least, because, like, the person who says the least is often pegged as being the smartest. And, like, I've done that, too. I've done that where that this person's not saying, I'm like, what do they do?
And I've talked to people who do that in meetings, and then afterward, they're like, I don't know shit. Like, I'm just trying to be quiet, stay out of the way. You guys seem to have it handled. I'm just listening, trying to learn. It's like, wow, I thought you had some secret knowledge there. Like, I really did. But no, they're just being quiet. I try to do that now, but it's so hard. It's working against my nature.
This person who is now my boss's boss came to me in that moment. We were having a big team, like a meeting. It was like a 2-day training. All of the leaders were in a room together for 2 whole days. And I absolutely love things like that. I'm like, I'll sit around a table and talk. Yay. About things that we all feel really good and knowledgeable about. Awesome. So I always get jazzed up, amped up. I'm always the first to like raise my hand. Like, yes, thing to say. I'm
go ahead
and answer. Let's come my group. And everyone's like, geez, calm down. Like, she's going to do all of it. All I have to do is sit back and not do anything because she's going to do it all. So I inadvertently was robbing other people of moments that I was already excited about. The whole point of having me there, I later realized, was to get everyone else to contribute. So what my boss's boss told me in that moment, we took a break and he kind of pulled me aside and he was like, hey, I want you to try something. I want you to get everybody else in the room to say what you wanted to say. He said, I want you to find somebody else in the room to say what you wanted to say. I'm like, how am I going to do that? And he's like, well, you just had a good start just now. You asked me a question. He's like, if you have something that you want to say, but your goal is to get somebody else to say it, there's a reason why you're thinking it. And if you can get somebody else to connect that pathway, they're going to start thinking of it too. And if you give them an open platform, an open stage to talk, they're probably going to say it. So everybody comes back and I was like, and you know, they get the lecture started back up again. They're talking about this point, that point. And I had a best practice. Hey, this thing happens. What do you guys do? And I'm like, oh, I know what I do. And I was like, wait a minute. My boss doesn't want to hear me talk. Or he doesn't want to hear me give the answer. So I looked at somebody else who I knew also did the same thing. And I immediately, instead of saying what I do, I looked at this person and I was like, hey, this sounds like that thing that you do whenever you do blah, 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 blah. Can you tell us what that is? And she said the thing. And I was like, yes. Oh, awesome. How do you guys feel about that? I was like, I do that too. And so it wasn't me saying it. It was somebody else saying it. But other people saw that I recognized it enough to also call it out in somebody else and give them the limelight. And it didn't just feel good for that interaction between me and the person. Everybody else in the room saw that. And that was probably one of the first things in my whole career path that I did that was so beneficial for myself. And I started doing that again and again and again. And suddenly people are drawn to me. They recognize me. They want to be around me because they know if they surround themselves or if they surround me with, if everybody comes to me, they're going to get to contribute. Whereas if they go to somebody else, they're probably just going to be a fly on the wall and a spectator.
I really like that. I'm going to have to try that to get the other person to say like what you're about to say. That's like, oh, no, I'll have to try that. I'm trying to think of a good time for me to try that because I don't get to like talk with groups very often. except on Zoom meetings, which it loses a bit of something. But well, so I guess we'll close up here today, and I'm gonna plug a little bit. If you're tuning into this podcast, I don't know where you are at in the journey. So you may just tune into this very first episode. Maybe you're a marketer, maybe you're a business owner. You've been listening for a while. Maybe you know me, maybe you don't, you know. But one thing that I'm doing right now, that if you liked what we talked about here on the podcast, is the Short Marketing Mastermind. So my company, Short Cookie, I primarily work as a fractional CMO for law firms, but I really can only expand that so much. Like, I can only work with so many people in a one-on-one setting. And so I'm opening up kind of another part of my company where I'm training other marketers on legal marketing. And so this is going to be a mastermind group for marketers who already know a little bit about marketing, who may be doing it for a while, but need a place to get new ideas, specifically for the legal industry. Or maybe this is something like you're very new, you just got your first legal marketing job, and your boss wanted to give you some resources to train you on how to be a better marketer, how to use all these tools, what works, what doesn't, you know, what salespeople to talk to, what salespeople to avoid. A lot of that in legal marketing for some reason. I have some good hookups at different companies if you want somebody who's not going to annoy you to death. Anyway, so if you're interested, curious, whatever, visit sharpmarketingmastermind.com. That's the page where you can learn a little bit more about the program. And if you're interested, hope to see you as part of the mastermind group. Christine, thanks so much as always for being here and sharing your stories. And we'll be back again next week.
Bye, guys.